Director's report, so with that, Mr. Director, I turn it to you.
All right, well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner. Joe, tag team the director's report a little bit this morning, and also a couple of commissioners, I think, will weigh in when I talk about the North of Falcon process. First, I want to draw your attention to the written reports. There's a couple items in there that I think are particularly noteworthy. We recently recognized a hunter education volunteer named Howard Gardner for 60 years of teaching hunter ed. He taught his first hunter ed class when Joe Storer was but 1 year old. And it was the year I was born. So, and we're pretty old, so you can imagine how many thousands of students that he's taught. And that's, I don't know, I just thought that was pretty remarkable, and just wanted to talk about volunteerism in general. It's amazing how much people do for the department and for their fellow sportsmen. It's neat, the kind of effort that people put in for the natural resources. A note on the wildlife diversity program, and particularly our fisher reintroduction. We brought down 43 fishers this year with 27 last year. That's pushing 70 as far as I can do my math. That's a pretty neat program. We completed some efforts on the Olympic Peninsula a couple years ago, and so this was more in the Mount Rainier area. And it'll be fun to watch those fishers and see how they increase. Most of them are, or I think all of them maybe, are have telemetry, so we'll be able to keep a close watch on them. The enforcement on the wolf policy, we had a wolf advisory meeting. They're looking at our lethal control policy as one of their main emphasis this spring, trying to figure out ways to be more responsive to wolf depredations on livestock and control problems before they get way out of hand. So I think they made some great efforts this year. I haven't seen a final report on that, but it should be coming out pretty soon, and they continue to do a great job. The enforcement program has a nice series of reports in there, but a couple things to think about. We have the hydraulic project. There's an example in there, and that's something that we forget about sometimes. Our enforcement people do look for violations to developments or hydraulic or projects on shorelines where there's illegal armoring or people haven't got the right permits. It occurs all around this state because we have so much water and so much waterfront property. It's really hard to keep up on that, but it's something that our folks are doing all the time, and it occurs not only on the west side in Puget Sound, I think that's where a lot of us think about it mostly, but also on the east side and on a lot of the lakes and reservoirs. Take a look at that photo on page 4 of the pickup truck that's rolled over there. I'm glad to see him rolled over. Every spring we have problems with people mudding or running their four-wheel drives and spinning donuts out through wet meadows, and it's just something it's behavior that's needs to stop, and it's difficult to catch those folks, but they sure do a lot of damage, and it's good to see us get a couple of folks at least, but it's something that we work on, and it's been going on forever, so always a challenge. A couple of real interesting commercial seafood cases, and you'll note that the enforcement folks are continuing to work on self-improvement with the video. Bit of a note on the Sioux Creek hatchery and the capital budgets. I think Joe's going to talk a little bit about budgets, and he'll touch on those a little bit later, but a pretty good written report for you. I was reviewing my notes this morning, wondering what should I report on, what have I been doing? Well, prior to our last commission meeting, and pretty much every day since, I've been working on North of Falcon process. We've had two Pacific Fisheries Management Council meetings, one in Vancouver just before the previous commission meeting, and the one we just finished in Sacramento, where we were able to come to resolution with the tribes and set a salmon season north of Falcon for this year. not only those two big meetings, but we've had two what we call our North of Falcon meetings, which are meetings with the tribes. We have one annually in Lacey and another one up in Linwood. The Linwood's a three-day meeting. And then on top of that, literally dozens of meetings with individual tribes to try to shape the individual drainage level fisheries and talk about take. So it's an incredibly huge effort for the fish program. It's an all-hands-on-deck effort. And Ron Warren and his top staff are literally going every day on it. Down in California, we had, I think, about 20 staff down there and several modelers working, 14, 15 hours a day, cranking out information for people. It's really remarkable to watch, and I think that the commissioners that were attended will confirm that. It's pretty special to see people working that hard and having as good a time as they do doing it. Anyway, it was a very interesting process. So this year, again, it's the third North of Falcon I've been involved in, and all 3 years we've been dealing with low populations, particularly in Puget Sound. Chinook populations are about 25% less than they were when listed in 1999. So that's a continual difficult situation from a conservation standpoint. The last couple years, our coho populations have been impacted by warm ocean conditions, and then in 2015 we have warm water conditions in the tributaries. So we're going to have we're uncertain about what kind of recruitment we will get to 2018. The bottom line is we're in a low period right now for salmon, and it's made negotiations incredibly difficult. They're difficult on years of abundance. They're extremely difficult when fish are limited in numbers. Last year, if you recall, we were unable to come to a resolution in April at the last Pacific Fishery or the council meeting, and our decisions were delayed a couple months. It put a lot of stress on the system, not only for the department, but for fishermen and people in the fishing industry, both recreational and commercial, just being uncertain and wondering when their seasons would occur and not having the ability to plan. And it was not only on the state side, if you will, the recreational and commercial fisheries side, but it was also on the tribal side. And that uncertainty and just, I think, general dissatisfaction with the delay in that season forced us, if you will, to put an extra special effort this year into meeting more often, talking more, and trying to do something a bit different than we have the past few years. And it did pay off this year. The attitudes and cooperation was better than I've ever seen it, and I was told better than it had been for several years. We all rolled up our sleeves and looked at the populations truly as co-managers and decided where we needed to limit take, and we worked to shape those seasons where everyone could get some of their needs met. This year, the limiting stocks were the Skagit River coho and also the Queets River coho out on the coast. So those systems, we had to shape the northern marine fisheries in a way, and the tribal terminal fisheries in a way, to limit the take on those species for the Skagit, and on the Queets River, kind of the same thing. Reduced coho seasons from the long-term average, but we were still able to have a little bit better season on the coast this year than last year. Chinook seasons we were able to actually offer a bit more this year. They weren't quite as constrained on the Chinook side, and the Lake Washington stocks in particular, which have constrained us in past years, were a little bit better. So we were able to put a season in everywhere. They're going to be limited. We lost some really popular times. So everybody lost a little, but people gained some from where we were last year. One thing we really wanted to do was to maintain some seasons in the Strait of Juan de Fuca in the CQ area, and we were able to do that. It's not everything we wanted, but it's a way better season than it was last year, and they will have a few weeks of coho fishing out there, which is very important to the resorts in that area. Right now, we're working with the tribes to complete the list of approved fisheries, the LOAF, and then that will need to be approved through NOAA, and we'll be able to secure a permit, hopefully, through the Bureau of Indian Affairs. So fisheries are set to begin May 1st, and so hopefully everything will fall in place, and that'll happen. So, commissioners, do you want to add to that? Commissioner Keogh and Commissioner Graybill were both present, and I'd like to, if you have some impressions, it'd be great.
I last year was my first North of Falcon. This year, the second. They were radically different. The experience that we had the previous year didn't satisfy anyone on the tribal or the state side, and our various user groups too, whether it was commercial or charter fleets or even sports fishermen, really suffered from the results of their year prior. So there was a much higher emphasis on cooperation this year, different atmosphere. On the tribal side as well, one thing I have to commend the director, Ron Warren, the staff. It's amazing to see the amount of work, I mean, 16-hour days, day after day after day, the amount of work and energy they have to apply to this process. You have to witness to appreciate, and I really commend our staff and everyone that's involved in the process. This year, for the first time, and again, it's only my second year, we actually saw tribal nations working together cooperatively to meet goals, to help us, the state, to have recreational fisheries and commercial fisheries. And again, I can't emphasize enough the difference in atmosphere there was. A lot of that being the experience from the previous year, but also the advanced work that was done by our staff meeting with the tribes. As soon as North of Falcon was completed last year, they began meetings again. And so we saw the benefit of that advanced work. And it's very much a relationship process, and the amount of respect that the tribe technical staff shares with our technical staff, as well as the tribal leaders, and respect for Ron Warren, the director. And I should also mention that J.T. Austin was there from the governor's office, and that had a lot of impact on the proceedings. They were very much impressed that there was a representative from the governor's office there. So a lot of very positive things happened this year, and I hope to see that same spirit extend into next year, and we can see much more positive results and progress in the North of Falcon. And again, thanks so much for our department did an amazing job. The director was quoted in one of the newspaper articles, it's like buyer's remorse after you bring home that new car and you look out in the driveway and you think, oh boy. But overall, and I want to mention even the commercial fishermen, the charter operators, and other user groups commended the department for what they did. And that was the first time that I'd heard from the commercial side that we had accomplished our goals. And I appreciate the positive comments they gave us after those meetings, too.
Thank you. I don't have a lot more to add, this is my 19th North of Falcon. So, I will say there was a different tenor this year, still very serious. And as the director pointed out, it's very, very difficult when you have constraining stocks. And it seems like every year we have constraining stocks, some more constraining than others. And you have, certain of the tribes are in terminal areas, and they have needs, subsistence and ceremonial needs that are very important to them individually, and also very important to the tribes in general. They're very supportive of each other on that. And so it's complicated. It has, like every year, it has its peaks and valleys in terms of stress. You know, there's a proposal that's extended, and then the tribes fire back on something, and so it takes a lot of discipline, motivation, to kind of for staff to work through it, and they did a great job, and I commend the director too. There, it's he spends a lot of time, maybe not kind of in with the details, and defers to others, which is in my mind, which he should do, because it's there's a lot of people that have a lot of experience in that, and he has good staff. And I'll just close by saying. being in our caucus room, the Washington State caucus room with stakeholders, it was much different this year than last year. You heard a lot of clamoring from, let's hold the line, we're not going to agree to this. We didn't hear this year, and I think a lot of it is because some of the business operators, charter operators, when the news got out that there was no fishing, the public, you know, they hear that and they say, well, there's no fishing. And so when ultimately we did open the seasons, people had already made plans otherwise or didn't know that there was going to be fishing opportunity. So you know, the director did what he had to do last year, but I think certainly the department and our stakeholders who were down in Sacramento realized that not reaching an agreement, even though it was imperfect for many of them, was not a acceptable outcome. So with that, I'm looking forward to my 20th. Maybe somebody can buy me a drink down there or something to celebrate my 20th or wherever it is. But so that's my report. Thank you.
Well, thank you for that. And thanks. Oh, sure.
Sort of the commissioner from a distance observation. I've been interested looking at the media coverage and the headlines that have sort of, some have been glass half empty and some have been glass half full, looking at the fact that we have been able to extend some seasons. But mostly what I want to note is this is the third time from a distance I've watched the process, and I do want to commend staff, co-managers, and you, Director. Certainly this was a much better process, and to have a result timely is gratifying, I hope, for all of our stakeholders as well as us as commissioners. So I want to just add my thanks to everyone.
Well, thank you for that. Lessons learned, and we'll continue to improve the process. Commissioner Graybill, thanks for mentioning J.T. Austin, and also we need to mention Phil Anderson. He's the one of the commissioners from Washington, and his help with some of the technical sticky issues was invaluable this year, so I want to acknowledge Phil, too. Part of this, part of the discussions down there, we had some side conversations with Oregon on the Columbia River policy and setting those seasons. Those seasons are still in flux. Of course, the commission has our policy that you've established. The first really part to come to discussions or have discussions with Oregon will be at the first fishery update in May. That's when Oregon will decide whether to implement a tangle net fishery. It's uncertain whether that will happen. It depends on what their take has been and how much of the allocation has been used. But at that time, we will be working with Oregon to decide what we're going to do or how that season's going to come out. The fall seasons, well, for summer Chinook, we're not going to have fisheries down there, commercial fisheries. And so that's been generally decided. In the fall, we don't have the same seasons set. But it looks like that may be an academic exercise because of the low numbers of B-run steelhead will constrain those seasons, and so in all likelihood, we will have a converge. We'll be able to converge on a season that, you know, is conservative for both states. So anyway, more to come on that, I think, as we go along. But it's still in play, and. We'll, you know more here is when we see the update in May. So with that, I'll turn it over to Joe. He has a couple items. Oh, one thing, I wanted to welcome my spouse to the commission meeting. This is the first commission meeting she's attended here in Washington. And so anyway, thank you, Michelle, for popping in. And anyway, Joe, you have a couple items.
Yeah, thanks, Director, and good morning, commissioners and public members. I wanted to just touch on three different topics briefly here. First is our legislative situation. I think you all remember that we had six bills we were sponsoring, pushing through the legislature, four of those having to do with budget and two just straight policy bills. So the good news is that House Bill 1464, which was about development of cooperative agreements to expand recreational access on privately owned lands, passed the Senate 48-0 with one excused. And the second Senate Bill 5306, which was about record-keeping requirements for secondary fish receivers, was signed by the Speaker, and it had passed the House last week 96-1. So, you know, very very successful efforts there to on relatively minor policy bills, but important to us. The other four bills that we were sponsoring had something to do with budget. And so we call those NTIB. And those are on hold and are part of the mix as the legislature moves forward. So let me talk a little bit about those. The hydraulic project approval bill is still being worked with stakeholders. It would enhance some of our some policy issues around enforcement and the lines of authority. We were initially looking for some more staff and some additional authority in several areas, and it looks like we may settle back and compromise around an extension of the sunset date. Those fees were going to sunset this year without an extension. So we're thinking we'll get an extension of the sunset date and possibly some enhancements to authority around activities within streams below mean high water. The other is our aquatic invasive species bill. Again, looking for some staff and some enhancement to our enforcement capability around the import of invasives. That's sitting out there and still being negotiated. Probably the most important to us are the recreational and commercial fee bills. I think you remember we talked about the potential for a $20 to $25 million shortfall within the next biennium or extending into the next two biennia without an increase in recreational and commercial fees. And recognizing, and I'll say this right up front, that I think the director said this a number of times, we're pushing a threshold here in what the public can bear in terms of increasing those fees. And I think that's manifested itself as our discussions have moved forward. There's a lot of support for the agency and a lot of support and recognition that costs increase. But with the loss of about half of our general fund over the last 5 or 6 years, it's a big lift to try to expect the recreational and commercial users to carry all of that burden. And so as we talk to the legislature about our fee bill, we're also talking about the possibility of general fund increases and trying to see if there are openings there. Right now, we're in a place of a lot of uncertainty, and it's because we have two very different approaches from the Senate and the House. The House basically adopted our fee proposal, and so there would be full funding for the cost of living increases and maintaining existing opportunities with a few small new opportunities added on. But that's about a $25 million lift. The Senate did not include the fee proposals and instead funded at existing levels with a $5 million general fund increase, which would help us with some of those impacts, but it's a long ways from $20 million. And just to remind you, without some new funding in the next biennium and the biennium beyond that, we're going to have to look at existing fish hatcheries, the new monitoring and sampling requirements for the Columbia River and coastal salmon fisheries, our hopes to provide mobile apps for hunters and anglers, enforcement impacts, private land hunting access, and increases in fishing opportunities in places like Baker Lake and the Skagit River. So, again, it's just very important for us to maintain what we have, that we get something along the lines of $20 million. I mean, we're looking at compromises. We're talking to recreational and commercial fishers and legislature about what we might do to just get us through the next biennium and live to fight another day. But those are all out there and on hold. All new revenue proposals from almost all agencies, especially natural resources, are on hold until the larger budget questions are resolved. And we're hearing that the June forecast, which comes out, I think, was the third week of June, may be a point in time when a special second or a special session might be called. On the other hand, the governor may decide to, assuming they don't make it to April 23rd, which is the close of the existing session, governor may call them back into session soon after that or wait for some time. And don't know how that's going to turn out. But again, part of the cloud that's over us in terms of budget right now. The other piece of information, I guess, is that the rumor mill says that the quarterly budget projections will be up from $300 to $500 million. So that's another reason the legislature may wait to choose for those forecasts to come out before they close on the budget. Third topic is strategic planning. So, you know, setting all that aside, we're looking forward and we're a little bit behind because of that budget cloud, but looking forward at where we think the agency ought to be going at big picture, at a maybe 3-year horizon and maybe a 6 to 10 year horizon, and starting a process internally to identify those objectives and how we would meet those objectives. And I'd like to try to pull as many of you all into that process as possible as are interested. So we'll be coming to you soon with some proposals about how we think that process ought to work and how you might help us influence that. Of course, you do the director's performance agreement. I think it's scheduled for this year for renewal in June, and we have to link those together. And so I'd like to start those discussions earlier versus later and give you all a sense of where the leadership and the agency thinks the agency ought to be working towards in the next 3 to 6 years. So I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
By engaging us in that process, Joe, I mean, we're limited to 4 of us being, a different sort of...
No, there's that consideration, but there's processes we can work through to
engage good.
Everybody.
Okay, good. Okay. Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Baker. Yeah, capital budget is, I was going to start to say pretty rosy. It's pretty good. It's pretty strong for us in terms of our infrastructure issues. We have a number of concerns with the House capital budget as far as the Washington Wildlife Recreation Program goes. That's the funding that comes through. It's capital bond authority for land acquisition, park improvements, trailway improvements, et cetera. The House capital budget chose not to support, fund the process that's gone through every year, where there's a pretty methodical ranking of acquisitions and park improvements and other pieces. And we lost four major land acquisition possibilities in the House capital budget. And others are received reduction to other agencies and local governments. So that's an active discussion that's going on now on around the capital negotiations. But overall, in terms of our hatchery improvements, our access sites, the funding for some of our minor works efforts, those are projects less than $1 million. That looks pretty good in both budgets.
That's it.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to acknowledge, here we are in Region 1. Thank you for the hospitality. I have Steve Pazanga in the audience. Steve, I have a couple more minutes. Give us your two-minute talk on the region and how we're doing. I love to put you on the spot or people on the spot.
And do it diverse. Limericks.
Those of us on the west side, what you see over here on the floor, that is sunshine. And so
we're not very nice, familiar with
nice to be in Spokane and see the sun. We've had about four sunny days in 12 months, or not quite that bad. But anyway, how's things going here in Spokane, Steve?
Well, thank you, Director Unsworth, and good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. So, Steve Pazanga, I'm the Regional Director here out of Spokane, and appreciate that, Jim, very much. I'd like to welcome you to sunny Spokane, and don't worry, Gonzaga will be back next year. All is right. So I know that tomorrow on the schedule you'll have a discussion from Captain Dan Ron and an overview on the enforcement program specifically. So I won't steal any of Dan's thunder. Look forward to you engaging tomorrow with Dan on the enforcement program overview and update. Here in Region 1, we have a lot of exciting activities going on. And it's nice to be able to be here and talk specifically about some of those things that you have on your agenda that are Region 1-centric. And so as we talk about whether it's hunting season proposals with direct impact in the Northeast, or whether we talk about land acquisitions and cooperative projects that'll be presented to you today, our work with the Inland Northwest Land Conservancy, there are a number of things that are really exciting here, and just very pleased to be in the region right now and be heading things up here. One thing that has stayed relatively quiet and that we will be discussing with you, and it's an exciting new opportunity that we have coming on Lake Roosevelt. And I don't think I'm getting too far ahead of the game, because we've had our initial conversations with both the Colville Tribe and the Spokane Tribe, and we have an opportunity to be able to harvest white sturgeon. This is because of an overrepresentation of some specific family groups based on capturing wild broodstock, bringing them in and spawning them, and then releasing those fry. Well, what we've found is that after about 14 or 15 years now, in looking at the composition of that white sturgeon population in Lake Roosevelt, we've overrepresented some of those crossings that were produced within the hatchery, and it's created a harvest opportunity for us. So we will be promoting and opening, with your permission, a white sturgeon season here as soon as this summer. This isn't down the road. This is imminent, and we'll be presenting that to you. And so that's an exciting opportunity that actually should extend 8, 10, potentially 12 years in length by the time we work through this cohort of fish. So I wanted to mention that. It literally is breaking news, if you will, but it's an exciting opportunity that we haven't had for quite some time. We've heard about members of the public discussed the predator interactions or concern for predator populations. Region 1 has always had very robust predator populations, and we're also the heart of now the new predator-prey interaction project in coordination with the University of Washington. And so field staff have had a tremendous winter capture season, and we have elk, mule deer, whitetail deer, and moose wearing radio collars as a result of capture efforts and coordinated work with the University of Washington. That project will be ongoing now for about a five-length period. And two of the central study areas in GMUs 117 and 121, and then some additional areas in the central part of Region 2, working with my counterpart, Regional Director Jim Brown over there. So look forward to that project getting off the ground and bringing more information to you through the years as we learn more about this interaction between our large carnivore populations and our ungulates. So just a couple of things off the fly, and I should know better because Jim likes to do this, and I should be prepared for that, but welcome.
Okay, so Finnish, how's turkey season going to be? It opens what?
Well, I wasn't going to say anything negative. You never want to say anything negative. But you do realize that turkey season opens tomorrow, and it's Easter weekend. So as much as we love to have you here in Spokane, it's a calendar challenge for a number of us. Turkeys overall have fared well. So we heard a lot about a hard winter. You talk about animals that are resilient. Our turkey populations are doing very well, and I expect that we're going to have a lot of people afield tomorrow morning.
Great. Steve? Yeah.
I have a couple of questions. I'll ask both of them. They're different. You mentioned the predator-prey study. Could you talk about whether or not we have any stakeholder engagement with that work? As we know, we have stakeholders who are very concerned about it. That's my first question. The second is, you mentioned Lake Roosevelt as well, and we really have very good co-manager relations up there, and a renewed concern about a predator, the northern pike. Can you talk a little bit about that as well? So.
Yeah, so maybe I'll take them in reverse order, starting with northern pike. So the Kalispell Tribe, the Spokane Tribe, Colville Tribe, and the Department of Fish and Wildlife have all been working toward reducing northern pike populations. The initial work started in Box Canyon, where we saw an increase in that northern pike population coming out of Montana and Idaho. You can't turn the spigot off. So the way the system runs, with extensive populations in Montana and Idaho, both introduced, we're unable to prevent northern pike from continuing to find their way into Washington through the Ponderay system. But what we have been able to do pretty effectively is to reduce those populations. And while I won't remember the exact numbers off the top of my head, but at one point in time when we started monitoring and began eradication work by netting pike that can be done in these shallow bays and sloughs just prior to spawning time and really reduce the amount of bycatch that occurs and specifically target these large pike, our catch per net were in the, I'm going to say, in the high 30s per net, and these were with 60 or more net sets per night. The goal was to bring that population down to less than 2 fish per net night, and within about a 7-year time frame, we were actually able to bring that population down to less than 2 fish per net night. So that had been extremely effective. Now we're taking that same approach and we're trying to apply it to broader areas, now moving into Lake Roosevelt. The area around Kettle Falls is extremely of concern now. And so we're trying to stay ahead of the game, but it will be difficult. And it is going to take a combination of both mechanical removal through netting, as well as coordination and promotion of a pike opportunity with our angling public. So, relative to stakeholders on the University of Washington Predator Prey Project. We are still somewhat in our infancy on the project. The universities are just now solidifying the students that will be working on various aspects of the project. And so the university leads for UW are Drs. Laura Prue, Dr. Aaron Wersing, and Beth Gardner. They have just now landed on students that are going to begin the project. The Department of Fish and Wildlife was able to jumpstart and start capturing and getting animals collared this winter so that the university and the students could take advantage of that. So I guess to get to your point, Commissioner Thorburn, we're still very much looking for opportunities to engage broader stakeholders on the project. So we will be doing that as we have in the past, whether it's the mule deer work that has gone on or the Northeast Whitetailed work through Woody Myers and the groups that were involved there. And so still have work to do on reaching out to our stakeholders and broadening that opportunity for engagement in cooperation with that work, which we plan to do.
Thank you. Thanks, Steve.
Yes.
Good morning, Steve. I was at the meeting in Coeur d'Alene where the white sturgeon opportunity became apparent. And, you know, we just in the last 2 years, we'll be in our second year of a white sturgeon opportunity in the Columbia River in our region, Region 2, that has been extremely popular. I think this opportunity will be very popular with the public and also the tribes. And I have to say that I was very much impressed with the cooperative work being done with the Colville Nation, the Colville Confederated Tribes, and the department. And there continues to be good relationship between those partners, co-managers.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Director. Thank you, Deputy Director. And thanks, Steve. Oh, I'm sorry.
And I should have stopped, Jim, when we were going through this on the undersized crab you were talking about. And it said that there were 640 pounds, basically making up 13% of the load. I guess where I'm headed with that is, what kind of enforcement do we have? Because, I mean, if we all know that there can be a small percentile when they're out there catching crab and sizing them and this, that, and the other. But if 13% of the load were undersized, we got one of two things going there. Is evidently, how bad is this guy going to get spanked? He either needs to be have what we refer to in my part of the world as a come to Jesus moment, and one more violation like that, you're out of the fishing fleet, or it's telling me that our laws are so loose that people are going to take the risk that the penalty he's going to have to pay is doesn't amount to what the downside is. So I guess I'm just looking for an answer there, because it said he was cited, but I mean, is he pinned to a wall someplace? I guess that's...
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, I'll have to check and get back to you. I don't know what the disposition is.
But I mean, I hope you can understand where I'm coming from on the deal, is that, you know, okay, what the hell, we'll throw them in the pot if we get away with it. You know, the downside isn't that bad. Or there again, if he's just, that's the way he does business, I think he needs to go into a different business. So...
I think we, you know, almost every one of these reports, we see some examples of abuses in our fisheries and wildlife management. And so it just, I guess it just goes to show stuff continues to happen. We're spread very thin, and our folks need to work on every method they can to keep people following the rules. And so, yeah, and also, yeah, Joe just mentioned that many of the things don't even get prosecuted. It's prosecutors' discretion on whether or not to bring these cases to trial. And so it's all part of the whole mix on law enforcement.
And hearkening back to our last meeting in Olympia, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we had a report, was it on the Cowlitz River?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. honest to Pete, I went home just sick over that deal. And I thoroughly understand that government and private industry works totally different. But the survival rate on the steelhead was about 50%, and the survival rate on the Chinook was like 10%, and on the turning the smolt out. I'll assure you, if I had some guy calving out a set of my cows and he had mortality rates of 50% or 90%, somebody would have a whole lot of explaining to do. And it seemed to me that it was something that's been brewing over the years and it's just kept going downhill and downhill. But somebody's going to have to be held accountable. And I'm not pointing fingers at one individual, but evidently this has been snowballing over years. And those poor fishermen down there, they basically aren't going to have any fish to catch. And that's the sad part of it is. And talking to some people later, it seems as though Tacoma Power and Light have really dropped the ball on that thing. But no, it was one that going home, I'm just going, my Lord, I just can't believe that that has spiraled downhill that far and nobody stepped up and been held accountable for it. You know, and I'm not asking for people being fired, but we've got to make some changes because, I mean, that is just unacceptable to have a fishery get. And there again, I don't know a lot about it, but just the report. I mean, somebody'd have some questions to answer in my world.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, thank you. We have made some management changes down there, and some actions have been taken to work on the predation issue, and I can fill you in at the break on some details if you'd like.
Thank you, Director.